Welcome to the Ray Harryhausen Podcast, the show dedicated to the life, career, and films of a special effects titan. Join us as we host in-depth discussions about the work, influences, and legacy of this uniquely talented filmmaker. Brought to you by the Ray and Diana Harryhausen Foundation, we will be delving into Ray's archive to bring a unique insight into his work, including exclusive audio from the man himself from our own archives. We will be joined by special guests for retrospectives, exclusive announcements and competitions, so this podcast is a must-listen for all fans of the world of Ray Harryhausen, animation and classic filmmaking.
And welcome to episode 45 of the Ray Harryhausen podcast, or episode 13 for vodcast if you're watching on our video streaming link on YouTube. Now, today in this special podcast, we are going to be featuring interviews from Aardman archivists Tom Vincent and Zoe Critchley and Aardman co-founder Peter Lord. Now, I'm joined as usual by my collections manager, Connor Heaney, here at the Foundation. Hello, Connor. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, and I've been looking forward to sharing this interview for some time now. Vanessa Harryhausen and myself had a wonderful day at Aardman's studios, and as well as being a lot of fun, we had a very interesting chat with the archivist at Aardman. I suppose there's not all that many animation archives in the UK, and so we have a lot in common, and it was a really informative day.
Right, let's get listening.
So, Tom, you were here when Ray visited the Aardman offices in the past. Could you talk a little about your memories of that day?
Oh, yes, I remember that really, really well, as if it was yesterday. I think all of us were at Aardman really getting quite excited, because there are many of us at Aardman who are big Harryhausen fans. And so, obviously, went to the studio visit, and he went to the canteen, and there's lots of us at the canteen in a big queue, and we sat down and to hear him talk, and I think all of us were just like, you know, on the, just listening to every single word, and there was a moment, there was a kind of collective like, and he took out one of the skeletons, he brought one of the skeletons along with him, and I mean, I think we were very, we weren't expecting that, and I think it was just a, you know, it was such a nice thing where, because I'm at Aardman, there, you know, there are people have been there for like 20, 30 years, and you know, and also newcomers as well. It was just kind of just so great to see so many of us getting so excited about Ray coming and visiting.
And Vanessa, your dad visited a lot of people and did a lot of talks over the years, but you can verify that his trip to the Aardman offices was a real highlight for your dad.
It was. He came back absolutely cock-a-hoot about it all and said, I sat on the sheep, you know, and there's this lovely picture of Daddy sitting on the big model of Shaun the Sheep. And it was, he said that was the best day ever, you know, he just loved it. And, you know, every time he saw Wallace and Gromit or anything on TV like that, you know, he was like, oh, I know all those. So he was very appreciated of the talent that is here.
Zoe, you've been here at Aardman for slightly less time, but could you tell us just any memories you have of Ray and his films?
So the thing I always think of is, because I obviously wasn't here when he visited, but I have seen photographs of when he visited and went to the studios, and you can just tell in everyone's faces that they are so excited to be showing him what they're working on and that they're so happy to see him. And he's clearly having a great time as well. I mean, for me, with sort of, I was born in the 90s, so I didn't grow up so much with Ray's work. I've come to appreciate it more as I've gotten older and learnt more about stop motion. I know him because of references to him in Monsters, Inc., I think was the Harryhausen restaurant, and in Corpse Bride, the piano that they're playing is a Harryhausen. So there's, I've known of him for so long because he's so important to so many different animation companies, and he's been such an influence to so many people that I knew of him, I knew his name, and then I learned about his work. So he's just been such an influence to so many people. And you can tell his influence on Aardman so much.
Yeah. And Tom, just yourself as well, obviously, you got to see and meet Ray, but growing up, what were your memories of Ray's films?
Oh, yes. I mean, I was so enamored when I was so young. I remember in much the same way how King Kong had such an impact on Ray. When I saw King Kong for the first time on TV, I was absolutely mesmerized. And it's like, Dad, this is amazing. And I love this movie. And then my dad was saying, oh, yes, there's other films like this made in the same way. And I think it was thanks to my dad that I got to see films like Jason the Argonauts and The Seven Voyages of Sinbad. And ever since, you know, as a kid, since I was about seven, I've kind of like known about Ray and been a fan, and it kind of like helped me perhaps, you know, on this path that I'm now at Aardman right here, right today. I've always loved his films. I've never kind of like, there's never been a year where I've never seen a Ray Harryhausen film. It's always like around Christmas time, it's always great to kind of like, you know, eat some Christmas cake and watch a Harryhausen movie. And I think just recently, when I was last year, when I was up in Edinburgh for my birthday, going to visit the exhibition, that was such an exciting day just to see just so many of the characters, you know, and getting to meet them and meeting the Kraken. I was over the moon.
And that leads on nicely to my next question, because the fact that all of these models still exist from Ray's films, despite the fact that they are at least 40 years old, between 40 and 70 years old, these models, that in itself is quite unique, and that's due to Ray proactively keeping his collection together and forming a foundation to ensure that the creature collection and all of his artworks would be kept intact for future generations to enjoy. How do you feel about Ray's models being viewed by people who maybe weren't around during the film's original releases?
Now, I think it's really, really important, because I think that, I mean, when I was visiting the exhibition, I noticed there was a couple of families who were also going around as well, and just seeing like, you know, young kids' eyes lit up, saying about, it's almost in a way that they had no idea how these kind of films are made, and mm-hmm. just seeing, you know, these puppets, you know, in front of their eyes in life, and get to realise that, hang on a moment, it might be something that they can do themselves. Where, mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it's almost in the same story that when, say, Pete Lord and Dave Sproxton, the fans of Aardman, it's almost in a way they were inspired by, you know, filmmakers like Ray, and they actually started making films on their parents' kitchen table, using their, you know, dad's like 8mm film camera. So, and it's these kind of like exhibitions where it kind of perhaps, if it helps to inspire, you know, a next generation of filmmaker, I think it's absolutely, absolutely important.
Yeah, because the Harryhausen models, the only ones I have seen are the dinosaurs that we had down mm-hmm. When we did the Early Man exhibition. We had our dinosaurs, which were influenced by Ray's, and then we had, you kindly lent us the ones that we had to stand next to them to show how ours had been influenced. But just seeing those, and that they were the sort of the original design that we'd worked off, and it was amazing to see them.
And we're obviously here, although we're having a lot of fun, we're here to do a little bit of archive research, and I suppose Zoe and Tom, you're in kind of a similar position to us, and we have a fairly niche job in looking after these incredible animation archives. Could you just both tell us a little bit about the Aardman Archive and what your responsibilities are in terms of looking after these iconic models?
So Aardman, I've been at Aardman now for about 15 years. I was there kind of the first archivist at Aardman, and Zoe, you know, join me later on. basically I think that we've got responsibility to archive, collect items from our current productions. So it's very much like a living archive, where the archive is constantly growing. So it's a, you know, we've got responsibility of making sure that, you know, the stuff that's, you know, from our, you know, from new productions come to us, and we get to archive and catalogue them. And then, you know, from that, you know, through the archive collections, it's making sure that they're accessible for either for potential production reuse. So, for example, we've got lots of like props in the archive that, you know, can be used again in production. So keep an eye out on Arvin Films, you know, and see if you can spot a prop that has been seen before. But also, it's like helping to support kind of various different activities. Like we put on lots of exhibitions, both in the UK and abroad. So it's like, you know, supporting and those. So it's kind of like, you know, it's helping to curate, you know, getting the stuff out of the archive and packing them up, sending them around the world, which can be quite challenging but quite fun. Sometimes you do tend to go around the world to visit strange, lovely, beautiful places with Wallace and Gromit. But yeah, it's kind of like, it's making sure that the heritage of the studio is kind of like, is here for future generations. So it's things like, you know, the puppets, the props, the sets, the artwork, all the kind of stuff that we've made, you know, over the years, and just making sure that they're going to be available for the future.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing project for us because as an archive team, we were brought in after, you know, Arvin had been going on for several decades. So it's we're working with the new productions to make sure things are stored, but we're also going back and cataloguing and databasing the items that, you know, had been made prior to us starting. So that's an ongoing project we're always working on, just going through old artwork, making sure it's scanned in, digitised. And then old props as well, making sure we've got a thorough database of those, either for reuse or exhibition. Yeah, so we've got a full catalogue, which is always an ongoing project.
Looking after animation collections, there's never a dull moment, is there? And Vanessa, I'll just finish by asking you, firstly, about how you feel when you see Aardman paying tribute to your dad through their work, you know, so many years later, so many years after his last film was made. How do you feel about these ongoing tributes to your dad's work?
Very humble. I mean, Dad loved that kind of animation anyway, and he always used to say to me that in the early days he started with clay models and just doing stuff. So to have a lovely company like Aardman have all these wonderful different films and different techniques that they're using coming alive, and it thrilled Dad. I know he got such a kick out of watching whatever was on, whether it be Chicken Run or Wallace or Gromit, or, you know, he just loved them because of the old style, what he called the old style animation. So he appreciated that, and I got a thrill out of it. And I just think it's a lovely technique, you know, and I hope it goes on for a long, long time.
And today you've had a bit of an insight into what goes on behind the scenes as well in the archive. How do you feel about the work that Tom and Zoe are doing to keep their own archive together, you know, based on your own experiences of looking after your dad's collection?
Yeah, I think it's fabulous. It's very time consuming, obviously cataloguing and doing different things and, you know, separating the different films and props and whatnot. But yeah, no, I think it's great, and it's fascinating seeing how they're storing and looking after and preserving these individual items. So I've learned a lot, and it's been a great humble honour to meet both of you and be here where Daddy was. And you know, we've got that lovely picture of him sitting on Shaun the Sheep. So happy memories there, and thank you both so much for your time.
Well, thank you for coming. Yeah, it's been amazing to talk to you guys.
And yeah, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, this has been a wonderful day, and thank you all for. Well,
so Ray visited here a number of times. I don't know how many exactly, 4 or 5, I should think, probably over the years, and it was always a huge event, and a great pleasure and honour indeed, you know, because he'd been so influential in the lives of so many people here. I mean, as you've seen, there's a big community of people here in all sorts of different departments, and but undoubtedly it's particularly the animators that were you know, in awe of him and delighted to see him. And he spoke our language, you know, that was, he was kind of wonderfully straightforward in his approach to his art form, the thing he did so well, and unpretentious, but absolutely convinced about the special virtue of, what do we call it, stop motion, stop frame? I never know what to call it, you know.
Probably stop frame.
After all these years, I still don't quite. I still never know which one to use, but he's like, he talked to the animators on, I think, certainly on the Pirates group of animators. So there we had about, you know, we had quite a big team at that time, like 25, 30 people, and just to hear him talking was inspiring. And of course, he'd always have a skeleton with him, a skeleton in the coffin. That was.
Yeah, he did. I was going to ask you if it came. Yeah, came in a coffin, because he had that specially made.
Right.
Especially himself.
Yeah, so that was hugely appreciated.
Yeah.
And God knows, for me, the Jason and the Argonauts is absolutely my favourite, but also the one that inspired me as a young man. I was like 12 or something like that, I think. And I remember going to see it in the cinema, you know, as you should do, as a kid, and just absolutely blown away by it. Completely blown away. Because then, you know, it seemed like he alone in the world could put stuff on the screen that nobody else could do then. That was phenomenal. And it was everything that you wanted to see as a young man, you know, spectacle and horror and just kind of magic and awe, because I always think that stop frame has a magic, which is special, and I use the word advisedly, because it's like when you see I love a magician on stage, right? Close-up magic. And when you see it, you know two things at the same time. You know that it's a trick, and you know it's an illusion, and you believe what you're seeing, because you see a £10 note disappear and reappear. You know it's kind of a trick, and yet you believe it because you've seen it. And far more extraordinary things than that, by the way. And so with stop frame, you know it's an illusion. Part of your brain knows it's an illusion, but more importantly, you are totally convinced in the moment. You believe in the characters, in the action. So believing in two things at once at the same time, I think, is absolutely magic. And, you know, that's all. Take our hats off to CG animation. It's very impressive and wonderful, but you don't get that magic thing, because you get the performance, absolutely you do, and it's brilliant, but what else is it apart from performance? It's a bunch of noughts and ones in a computer, you know. It's whereas stop motion, it's a puppet and it's alive at the same time,
so. And it's hands-on. It's the time you take and the frame you take,
mm-hmm,
to move that object or that individual.
Surely all of that time and effort is somehow embedded in the finished product, in the finished film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Peter, were you one of those young filmmakers that would break Ray's sequences down frame by frame? Would you watch the skeleton sequence, for example, and go, how did he do this, and try and work out the magic and the secrets?
Honestly, not that. No, not that. It's funny to think that when we started, Dave and I, when we started stop motion, stop frame, I think it was called, in 1972, I think, or 73, thereabouts. And we'd, you know, so Ray's films were still absolutely current, contemporary then. We'd go and watch them. But there's so little else behind the scenes that one knew about. There weren't. I'm sure there were articles in magazines, but there wasn't much. Heaven knows. You didn't get that super detailed behind the scenes material that you did later on. And we didn't have any, well, we had a 16 mil hand operated little viewing machine, but that was all we had. So I would never break down what he did. Wouldn't break it down. Would just know from the what publicity we did know that about the back projection and so on. Enough to understand how it was done in general terms, but in detail, no, we never analysed it. In fact, honestly, still haven't. I've never been through Jason and the Argonauts frame by frame. It seems to me still the most prodigious piece of filmmaking. You know, absolute incredible virtuosity in that.
It's the fluidity in the skeletons, especially in the Hydra, the movement and the time it takes to do all that.
Mm.
It's extraordinary to watch it today. Yeah, still, you know,
that's incredible to watch it today. Yeah. It is. Yeah. I mean, the animators at Aardman now, you know, they couldn't get anywhere near it because they're so used to the digital animation, which. I mean, operate, you know, recording frame by frame, so that every frame you know exactly where you are, exactly where you've been. You can review it continually, and that's fine. That's the way the world works now, and the results are very good. But to work, as it were, blind like Ray did, so that the information was stored in the magazine on the camera, but you couldn't see it until it had been developed, you know, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely phenomenal. We can understand it. We can think, gosh, we know that he must have tracked each of those skeletons every frame. Intellectually, we know that, but how on earth it was done, it's almost beyond belief, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there was no mobile phones then, and I remember him saying in one of the interviews that. You know, he would worry, like when he had a mass scene like the skeletons or Medusa or something, moving the snakes, if the telephone rang, he was absolutely scuppered because yes, he had markers and everything, but could he get that same sequence and movement? So sometimes you'd have to start all over again. So he banned telephones or anything that tinkled or did anything to distract him until he got that.
Yes.
He was so focused on that.
Yeah. Yes. And you had to be then, didn't you? I mean, you've got, as you say, you've got markers to mark things in space, but really the performance is all in your head. You have to hold it in your head. You have to know where you're going, know where you've been, you know, and get all the increments right in between. Like, heaven knows that's difficult enough with one puppet. But with six or something, or one snake, but I don't know how many snakes producers has on their head.
I can't remember the count. I should know because he told
snakes
me.
18? Yeah, I'm blind. Okay, so to track them all.
Yeah, obviously the Hydra had the seven heads, and I mean it's still. Talk about making life more complicated. But
you like to challenge. You always said, you know, sometimes I like these things that give you a challenge. And I was like, boy, talk about a headache.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We know in the archive that Ray took a break from animating the Hydra because he went to get married to Vanessa's mother.
Oh, right.
And we've got a telegram from
the
engineers.
We've got wonderful telegrams.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, congratulations, Ray, stop. Please advise on feeding time for Hydra. Even on his wedding day, he was being reminded of.
Good,
so
well.
I think my mother had a fair idea of what was gonna her life was going to be like with this man.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, we're on honeymoon, this is what we get.
Yeah.
So Vanessa, just talking about things that are special and magical on a different kind of frame, there's a wonderful photo of your dad here in the Aardman offices, sitting on the back of Shaun the Sheep. And to me, it sums up what I know about your dad's personality and his kind of the sense of fun that he had. And I know it's a photograph that means a lot to you as well.
Yeah, because he came back that day and he said, oh, I sat on Shaun the Sheep and, oh, it was wonderful, this and that, and that's how it should be. And I think it's the time that you guys took to do what I suppose today people call basic animation with the clay. But he loved that because that was his beginnings on how, and he loved the fluidity that you guys did. He loved the passion that all your troop, you know, on your different departments, they were so into doing this with such passion and dedication when he talked to them.
Yeah.
So he just always loved the visits here, and it was what he called his happy time here because, you know, it brought out the child in him. And I think when, you know, you hear some of his interviews, you know, he said, you've got to have that child and you've got to have that magic and belief, because without that, you have nothing. And it's not, it doesn't matter if you're 17 or 85, if you don't have that little magic to keep you going in that imagination, he didn't think there was any point.
No.
So that's what kept him going, and he loved you guys doing the magic, and Morph and Sean and everything, and he just treasured the time that he visited here. And I know because he always said it.
Yeah.
You know, so it was very comforting, and I love it too. It makes me happy to see it, and just his comments and everything.
Well, it's a great occupation, you know. If you just think, you're very lucky to do, you know. I mean, it's hard work, as we've suggested. You know, it requires incredible focus and so on. It's not simple, but it has a life to it. You know, people, civilians, foolishly imagine that it's like, they say you must be so patient, and I don't think patience is really very important at all. I mean, you know, it's not a question of patience. It's because every minute you're at work, and actually this applies 10 times more to your dad, every minute you're at work, you're trying to achieve something.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the process of getting towards an end, and that end is that shot that works, that shot which convinces, you know, that shot which tells a story and that the audience believes in. And that is your focus every minute of the day. Yeah. So of course you're not bored, because you're trying to achieve something every day. You're not just coasting, doing something repetitive, which is perhaps how some people think it is, but not at all.
No, I think it's... And you've got to have that child in you. You've got to make it happen, and enthusiasm and the drive, and it's... No, nothing's easy. If it's worth waiting and doing, it's going to be a good struggle. But you've got to have those technicians and those people who can bring it to life and take the time to do it. And that's what he loved, you know, especially about here, because it's the time it took to do. I heard somebody once say, oh, but they're just plasticine things. He said, I started with plasticine things.
Yeah.
I started with models and things. You've got to start somewhere. And to be able to manipulate that modelling clay and that, to do that and have it so fluid and beautiful, it's a talent.
It
and
is,
he really,
surely.
He loved it. He really did. Because it was back to basics,
yeah,
really.
Because that goes right back to... Willis O'Brien, doesn't
it? Yes,
it
does.
Very
it does.
His figures, I think, were clay stuck around some sort of armature, I think. You know, some of those caveman films he made, you know, back in the very early days. I must say, I find it extraordinary and wonderful that I can say I shook hands with Ray, who shook hands with Willis O'Brien, and that covers an entire industry.
Yeah.
From start to finish, from, you know, a century of inventing the technique to refining it to the most incredible extent, and how wonderful that is.
Wow.
But we haven't mentioned his puppet making, his model making, because that was phenomenal.
I know, absolutely superb. I was going to say that we found it was a clip of it in the National Galleries, of a, I think it's a cloth model, isn't it, of that, now correct me on the dinosaur.
Brontosaurus,
that's it. And it's quite a thick thing, and it's got this little animation, and he must have done it in his garden, because you can see the little birds on the wires, and it's not particularly a good footage, but of this dinosaur coming in into the scene and walking, and you can see the cloth where it's wrinkling around the thighs, and then you see that iconic swish of that beautiful tail that he carries right to the day he died with all his creatures, you know, that had a tail or whatever, that movement.
Yeah.
And that's, and I'm like, oh my God, that's a swish of the tail.
Yes.
Right? But that was just a cloth fabric thing. And he said to me that, in fact, we've got a note of it in the diaries, that Willis O'Brien, he went to see what Willis O'Brien thought of some of his stuff, and he said, oh, it's all very good, but really you need to sort out your models, because they're like sausages on, you know, they've got sausage legs for on your creatures.
Yeah.
But Dad didn't take that as offence. He took it like, okay, I need to do better. I need to, how do I work on this better? And so he grew from that. And you know, he always used to say to the young people, don't give up. It may look like you've got some crappy stuff here, but just keep on developing it and developing it over time. I mean, I don't know if you saw his first puppets with, there's one of Kong, it's like a marionette thing.
Oh, no, I've not seen it, I've heard about it, yeah.
And we had them on display at the museum in Edinburgh. And he was so embarrassed. You can't show those. They're awful. And I said, no, Daddy, the people need to know, the folk need to know how you started from the very beginning.
Mm. Yes.
You know, so it's so important, however
the
development goes.
Yes, our first efforts are terrible. Absolutely terrible. I mean, you know, the animation is appalling in the early days, and storytelling is not much good.
But it's
not much good either.
But you've got to
have to practice a lot. Yeah. You know, that 10,000 hours thing they talk about, you have to put in those hours of practice to get really, really good at something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, his puppet making was a thing that I could never do that. Couldn't then. So we've always hired in specialist puppet makers, you know. Because the whole building an armchair that works is a real craft thing, and then, you know, sculpting is another craft thing, and mold making is all these different skills that he had.
I know. I mean, he did the fairy tales, you know, the fairy tales and that. And that was a family affair, because Grandma, she did all the costumes, and Grandpa helped Daddy do the sets.
Mm-hmm.
And then the animation and everything. So that was a real family get together on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the time it takes, and you know. But he did. He always, when he came here at Aardman, he loved the enthusiasm of the teams and all the creatures and you know, he always, when he saw Sean, he said, "I sat on Sean."
And I have to say, I must say for the record, that was his idea.
Oh, you know, was it? Yeah, really?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I thought somebody asked him to sit on it.
No, you know, so I mean, maybe on the way out, because it was down in the hall there.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps someone said, "Oh, how about a picture with Sean?" But nobody said, "Hop on board." But he did. That was totally his idea.
I'm glad he didn't break it. He's quite a hefty man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Well, we've been learning a lot about what your archive team have been doing, and the great work that you're doing to preserve the collection, you know, your own animation collection. How do you feel about Ray's models being available for exhibition and being, you know, conserved for future generations to enjoy by the foundation? Because Ray was quite proactive in keeping his collection together during the time that he was making films.
Oh, it seems to me so obvious. It seems so obvious that these models and puppets and artifacts should be retained and kept in the best possible condition to be enjoyed by people. Because, I mean, I was there, as I'm sure you were there, it's his 90th birthday party at National Film Theatre. And there's Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, James Cameron, you know, Peter Jackson, everybody, all these incredible filmmakers, all saying how influential Ray had been in their careers, how, you know, fundamental to their careers. So that's a pretty impressive collection of people celebrating that work, you know, and people. Okay, people of my generation that took that on board at a key impressionable stage in our lives, you know, and carried it on. But no, that's so important. These artifacts are so important. Why wouldn't you show them to the public? Why wouldn't you keep them to be seen? Why keep them together as much as you possibly can, you know, because they're priceless.
Well, yeah, Ray established the foundation in 1986, which was actually the year I was born, so it wasn't too long after his final film, Clash of the Titans, and he obviously saw the intrinsic value in keeping the collection together and the educational merits that it has from there.
Yeah, yes. Because I went to visit them, see the collection at his house.
Oh, did you? Great. Which and so great. You got to go upstairs and see all his... Most of those cabinets he made himself.
Of course he did.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Amazing man.
Yeah, I know.
Amazing man. So that was just one very, very happy, very honoured to have seen that lot. Yeah. Oh.
Did you get a cup of tea in the Clash of the Titan mug?
I don't remember. I remember the tea.
Because Mummy always used to bring out the Clash of the Titan mugs and everybody used to go, oh my God, we'll drink it. Oh, can we drink out of this? You know, it was really quite funny.
Yeah. I can also tell you that, but it's secret. Anecdotally, we're working on a project now, you know, which is secret. But the name Harryhausen is used repeatedly in the conversation about, you know, not it's going to look anything like Ray's films. It's not, but it's definitely inspirational still.
Mm-hmm. That's really wonderful to hear. Thank you so much for that, Peter. It's really great to hear your memories of Ray.
That's fascinating, Connor. And when you were down at Arden, can I ask, did you get to see many wonderful fantasy creatures from the films that we love from the team down at Arden?
Well, we were very lucky. We got to actually go onto the set of one of their animated television programs and watch their animators hard at work for one of their, I think it's for Sky TV children's shows. So that in itself was very exciting. But yes, when Tom and Zoe produced Wallace and Gromit, models of Wallace and Gromit in person. I kind of, you know, people say this to us all the time when they see Ray's models, and of course, seeing Ray Harryhausen's original latex models is a spine-tingling experience. But having never seen Wallace and Gromit in person before, all kinds of childhood memories came flooding back. It's it's a very special company and a very exciting place to visit. And yes, we got to see them in person, and the Aardman Studios are, I think, much as you might expect them to be. There's all kinds of bits and pieces which are memorable from film and TV. And of course, I think as we mentioned in the interview there, there's a very famous and very touching image of Ray Harryhausen himself sitting on the back of Shaun the Sheep at Aardman Studios. He loved visiting there, and nice overlap there between two sort of legends of animation.
That's great, because animators don't often get to meet each other, because it's quite a solitary, isolating sort of experience and sort of workflow. And so you can find out more about Aardman Animation and their studios from this link below. That's wonderful, Connor. So what other update news do we have? Oh, actually, I've got some update news. This background here, for people who don't know, I've written a book. It's that one, Harryhausen, The Lost Movies. I have a new book out, and it's out in shops now. And it's this, Conan the Barbarian, the official story of the film. And it's a large coffee table book looking at the making of the film from 1982. And you might wonder, well, what's the Harryhausen connection here? Well, for those of you who have the book Harryhausen, The Lost Movies, you'll know that Ray Harryhausen himself was a great fan of Robert E. Howard's Barbarian character, Conan, and wanted to get the film rights himself back in the 1960s. And that didn't happen, but you can read about why it didn't in the book. And you can find out what really happened with the 1982 Conan, because I understand you're a fan of the film, Connor, aren't you?
Yes, I love Conan the Barbarian. I imagine that most people listening or watching this this podcast will be big fans of the Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan the Barbarian. It's a one in a million film. It's a very special movie, and looking forward to delving into your book. But I know that there was a number of writers involved. It was a film which changed a lot during its creation. So there'll be some secrets in there, I'm sure, that you'll be unveiling to the world.
Oh, absolutely. So I had full access to the Oliver Stone version, which preceded directly the John Milius version. So Oliver Stone was going to do something that was very grand, that was going to have kind of hordes of mutant armies, and very much in keeping with what Peter Jackson did for Lord of the Rings some 20 years after Conan came out in 1982. So you can find out all about that. And there's some interesting artwork, including from Jim Danforth, who'd worked on that version of Conan with Oliver Stone. That's all in there. Details about the unmade films, about King Conan. There's lots happening there. And if you want to win a free signed copy of that, then simply go on to my YouTube channel, which is Walsh Bros. You can see it in the caption here below. We're giving away a free signed copy of the book, and also free book plates signed by me and a bookmark if you send your Amazon review. Please make it a nice one. to me at info@walshbros.co.uk.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to learning the secret of steel. Finally, so many years on, it's going to be a special book, I'm sure.
And if you log on to our unboxing videos to watch the Centaur unboxing, you can find out a bit more about the development of the Golden Voyage, the different titles that it had, and a bit of behind-the-scenes information on the Centaur creature, and Carly as well. She's there as part of our unboxing collection. And just to kind of tease you up, it's from a different film. It was Medusa from Clash of the Titans, who features in one of our more recent unboxing videos. And that's become a very successful video. Lots of people have seen that. We have a Medusa to give away. We have a Centaur to give away. And also the Snake Woman Naga from the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. We have one of those to give away. Simply go on to the YouTube channel, subscribe and comment below the video. You could be in with a chance, but don't stare in her eyes, Connor. Look,
I have some experience of handling Medusa now. I can be very careful with her, but an impeccable stare and another fantastic piece from Starry's toy. So one lucky fan will win Medusa. What a fantastic prize that will be.
Yes, do. So if you want your own Medusa, as we say, there's only one that we're giving away from this collection. They are selling out quick, fast. Although they're rather expensive, they are rather beautiful. And this one comes with a diorama base. So if you go onto the Harryhausen unboxing channel, look for the video, you'll see what special extra she comes with. The deluxe version comes with something rather special. Well, that's fabulous, Connor. So thanks for chatting with us today. And we look forward to seeing you again very soon. What can you tell us about the next podcast?
Well, the next podcast is something perhaps a little unusual, because we've got a heavy metal legend coming to join us to chat about Ray Harryhausen. I won't give any more away. You'll just have to keep your ears peeled. But the next episode definitely goes up to 11. It's going to be a special show and a special chat. But in the meantime, many thanks again to Tom and Zoe and Peter from Aardman. Happy memories, and we'll hopefully see them again soon.
Copyright in the Ray Harryhausen podcast is owned by the Ray and Dinah Harryhausen Foundation, a registered Scottish charity, number SC001419, in the year 2023. This recording may not be used or repurposed in whole or in part without written permission from the Foundation. The views expressed within these podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of the Foundation, its trustees or employees. For further terms and conditions, please contact us at rayharryhausen.com, where you can find our social media links.